Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 2, season 12. Here we are, we're back again. We've put the band back together, right at the top of the podcast. We're not going to muck about, we're going to go straight in there. We're going to say on our left, hello Ryan Champion, welcome back.
Hello, good to be back.
It's wonderful to be back. How was Ibiza?
Good, but I didn't actually spin any wheels of steel.
Don't ruin it. In mining, Jack said you did, didn't you, Jack?
I watched a couple of DJs do that, but I didn't actually get involved in it myself. But there we are.
Yeah, in a mining Jack's head, didn't we, Jack? We in our head, we wanted them to be like Tall Paul or whatever.
I still think Ryan Champion is like a modern day version of the Saint, international man of mystery, doing pretty much every job in existence, including DJing.
Yeah, he just kind of just turns up somewhere and he goes, you need a DJ? Ryan Champion can be your DJ. Of course I can. And there he goes, and he does his thing. Anyway, we digress, boys. This is a rally podcast. It's not a DJ podcast. By the way, thank you for some of the messages we've had since coming back. Really do appreciate it. A couple of bits of admin before we go any further. I did say I had a spare copy of Dirt 4 that was kindly given to us by Codemasters. And we did that in the last episode of last season. We did a draw, off air. Check us out. There you go. We did it officially. Eddie C, you are the winner. We will be dropping you an email. If you do want it signed by us, you're weird. But we'll sign it for you. So it will be out to you. We'll drop your message in all seriousness. There it is. I'm just tapping away. That's the case for your copy there for. So there you go. Right, boys. A couple of things before we go headlong into Rally Argentina. We've not spoke for a while, Ryan Champion, but there's been some backwards and forwards. I've seen you had some comments to share. Rally GB route is now finally sorted. It looks like they found the compromise. What were your thoughts on this Super Orm stage, which is now no longer the power stage, but it's clearly going to be an epic stage in its own right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think bring it on. I mean, it's we always talk about rallying and how we can get more publicity and how we can get more mainstream fans into it. And this has got to be a great way of doing it. It used to be the spectator stages of the RAC rally that used to drag the casual fan into rallying. And that was a key part of the sport that we've lost over the years. So I thought it was a great idea. Let's hope there's some nice British weather that allows some fantastic helicopter shots of the Great Orm, because I think it could be an amazing spectacle. But the fact it goes right into the town with closed roads, I think just a great job by the rally, and I think it'll be exciting. And then, like I say, bring new fans in, which is important.
It does sound mega, Jack. We've got Ian Campbell coming up a little bit later on, who's kind of going to go through the stages and stuff like that. But it looks like they made a great effort in order to make to some degree a new version of the rally. It's kind of the next evolution of it, yet still kind of keep D-side, because I think everybody now agrees that the service park in D-side really works. Yes, the road sections, and I can speak from doing them, the road sections out can be quite long, and you know they can be horrendous. We've all been stuck in traffic trying to get out of Sweet Lamb, but you don't want to be under pressure, Jack, trying to get back to a service area when you're stuck in traffic and things like that. But it looks like they've kind of reinvented the rally, but kind of stayed the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think every rally is a compromise, isn't it? At the end of the day, I think any organizer will tell you that. You're never going to please absolutely everyone, and all you can do is try and shake things up every now and again, as they've tried to do this year. And you know, they do little bits each year to try and mix things up a bit. They're pretty limited with what they can do with the forest and things like that. But the closed road situation is good and should allow them to link up stages and stuff in the future. So if the rally continues to stay in Wales, then it's good to know that we've got the closed road out there, that they can link gravel stages together, or you know, we can do things like use parts of Land Unknown to mix it up and keep things exciting for the competitors.
No, good on you, Jack. Good on you. We had Gary Boyd last week, boys. I hope you listened. Well, if you didn't, I'm going to be testing you on a little bit later on. Gary Boyd, of course, who's kind of been one of our contributors. He did send us something over by Mads Osborne last week, talking about the Citroen and everything else. But he's back this week with his facts and his figures, boys. He's back with his facts and his figures. I know you're excited by this, because I'll be honest, I always get a little bit giddy when I get a message from him, because I always know I'm not going to know the answer to this stuff, whereas you two boys always make me feel like there's a chance. And of course, you've proved this, Jack, in the past. Now, rally trivia. goes beastly. Oh, do you see what he's done there? And I'll explain why, because it's 666, number of the beast. Rally Argentina had six different winners of six different nationalities in the last 6 years. 2013, Loeb, Lafala, 14, Meek, 15, Padden, 16, Nouvelle, 17, Tanak, 18. We've seen six different winners in 6 years previously in Argentina. 98, Makinen, 99, Kankinen, 2000, Burns, 2001, McRae, 2002, Sainz, 2003, Grunholm. What else this group of six had in common will, of course, be immediately obvious. I'll level with you, boys. It wasn't to me. Is it to you?
I didn't listen closely enough, but I was going to say they were world champions, the previous group, or the second group.
Well, the 98 to 2000 group of six were all world champions, Ryan Champion. There you go. That was the answer. Between them, they had a total of 14 titles. There you go.
Interesting.
Gary goes to great, great lengths, and it is amazing. The fact and the trivia. And I'll be honest with you, I almost feel intimidated now when we get this stuff through, because I feel like I put this podcast out. Obviously, as you point out, Jack Bengen, it is my train set, although I think it's a shared train set. But when you've got listeners that know a billion times more than you, it does put a little bit of added pressure on you, Jack.
It does. Absolutely.
One thing that sticks out from that list, Kankinen 99. Do you remember that rally, Argentina, when Kankinen won it?
Was that the whole Burns thing where there's a shark, there's a fin?
It was exactly that. When you had joined ProDrive, and I think it was his first win for something like 5 years, and there was team orders in place, and Burnsy thought he was going to win the rally, and then Kankinen stole it off him and kept the win.
There you go. I showed a little bit of applied knowledge there. That's what I need, a cup of coffee now. Right, boys. Speaking of Rally Argentina, we're going to get right to it. Let's put it this way, Ryan. You weren't with us last week, but I'm going to ask you. And be honest with us, who did you think was going to win it? Who did you have in mind you thought, this is theirs for the taking?
I probably wouldn't have picked Oit Tanak, honestly.
Yeah.
I thought Thierry Neuville would be the man on a charge, and I think I would have gone for Thierry Neuville. But Tanak showed everybody a clean pair of heels, didn't he?
He did. Now, we did predictions last week, and bless him, Jack Bengen went with Elvin Evans.
I was only wrong by 3 minutes.
You was only wrong by 3 minutes. I managed to not actually give a prediction.
Didn't you say Ogier?
Yes, I did. Sorry, I thought I was going to get away with it. Well remembered. Yeah, I did say Ogier. Now, we're going to park Oit Tanak, because Oit Tanak, I think, was just... Do you know what, right? In the current climate, he was... obviously we've just... It was a dominating performance. But in the current climate, Ryan Champion... 37.7 seconds he won the rally by. That's nothing, is it? Do you know what I mean? When you think about how some of these events used to be won by minutes and we'd never raise an eyebrow, 37.7 seconds isn't a great deal, really. And, you know, that's all that the difference was between him and Thierry Neuville.
Yeah, but it's just in modern times now these are such sprint rallies. I mean, actually... 40 seconds is quite a big gap, isn't it? That we're used to them being decided by 10 or 15 seconds. Things have become so close. And not only that, he had a spin, didn't he? He dropped quite a lot of time with a spin. So he definitely seemed to have speed to spare. And unfortunately, Latvala never really got far enough to show his true pace, other than he showed flashes of great pace for Toyota as well. So, they've definitely got a great car.
I'm worried again for Yari Matti, to be honest with you, Jack. We're back in the realms of him. I think Ryan does a far better kind of thing on this, to be honest with you. He's not in the zone, or he's not got the feeling or whatever it may be.
And he's lost that feeling.
That's it. He's lost that. Cue the song. If I was better at editing at this point, that's what would be coming in, but I'm not. Jack, I don't quite know what to say. Is he going to be perennially one of these drivers that is possibly one of the best drivers never to win a world championship?
He'll definitely be included in that group, I think, if he doesn't, Mooney. But it's difficult, isn't it? Some of the noises he was making last year were, you know, I remember one story from MN where he was saying that it was going to take Hoyt a little bit of time to bed into the car. Well, you know, here we are, you know, at Rally Argentina, where Hoyt's pretty much been the foreman in that team, hasn't he? He's been driving that team forward, and now he's took that victory, and he's... I don't remember anyone being as dominant in a rally other than Sebastian Ogier in the past few years as dominant as Hoyt was at the weekend. And he just, like Ryan said, he seemed to have a bit in the tank all the time. He was just on a different level. And I'm sure you're probably going to mention it in a bit, Tony, but there's a bit of news that Toyota are looking at upgrading the engine as well in the future. So let's hope this isn't a sign of things to come from a sporting perspective, because if Toyota continues to be this dominant, then we're going to get you know, we could have a return to a VW situation, couldn't we? So let's just hope it's a bit of an anomaly and that some of the other teams come back in the following rounds.
I don't think so, because look, it's only one rally where we thought Ogier was going to dominate every round of the championship because he could win on tarmac and gravel in the Focus and now in the Fiesta. And now suddenly we've got a Toyota looking dominant. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to get to that stage yet. I think it just looks like a great open championship, which is exciting.
But, right, is this, you know, are we in the realms of having a team that, you know, clearly if we went, you know, and we're only speculating, of course we're only speculating, which is most of what we do with most of the stories on here, let's be honest. But if we were going to kind of put them in some kind of order, we would probably go, in with regards to financial backing, we would probably go Toyota, Hyundai, Citroen, Ford or M Sport, wouldn't we? I think that'd be fair, wouldn't it?
Probably. Yes, it'd be interesting actually to get some figures, wouldn't it? I think we know that M Sport, with a little bit of Ford help, are certainly punching far above their weight. Yeah, I mean, Toyota have certainly got a huge budget, but I don't think Hyundai are lacking. You've only got to walk in the service area to see that, and you know, I'm sure they're spending their millions as well. So because we've seen that car be very, very quick at times also. So yeah, I just think it's quite exciting times ahead.
No, I agree, but I just, you know, I could see where perhaps Jack, and sorry, I'm putting probably words in your mouth here, was that where you were going? Was it the fact that, you know, Toyota is a very, very powerful beast, and you almost feel like, you know, the boss man, you know, I'm not talking about Tommy, Mr. Toyota, is, you know, he's got a passion for it, and it's almost, you know, it could be not quite money, no object, but you will feel that they will go on until they achieve a level of success.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think it's a mixture of things. You know, reading some of the comments from the story about Toyota's engine upgrade is, you know, they appear very, very, very confident, and, you know, we saw how good Hoyt was last year, and, you know, there was a couple of rallies that could have swung Hoyt's way last year that didn't, that would have had him a little bit closer to Ogier come the end of the season. So I think we're seeing Hoyt maturing as a driver and becoming a much more rounded driver. And you can only, you know, you can see that from how good he was at the weekend. So I think that allied to Toyota's potential for development in their car is what makes that package so sort of terrifying. But I do take what Ryan's saying, you know, we have seen other cars, you know, be similarly dominant in certain rallies this year, and similar driver pairings be dominant this year. But I just, that felt to me, watching that over the weekend, like a bit of a breakthrough for both Toyota and Hoyt. And you worry at what Hoyt's sort of capacity is going to be after, you know, getting that first win out of the way, the kind of mental boost that's going to provide him. And also the fact that he's, you know, he's regularly beating the likes of Latvala and Lappi as well. That's got to be a good combination for his mental approach to the next event, and I think he's going to be tough to beat from now on.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems ridiculous to go where I'm going to go next with this, but watching the highlights, and I watched some of the WRC live. It's again talking about daunting. It's hard to, you know, there's almost too much coverage at the moment, right? I never thought I'd say that, but it's hard to dip in and out of at times, and yeah, you know, you know what it's like, your family and stuff like that. You think, right, I'm going to sit down and watch this, and then it's the tracking video going around. You think, ah, okay, I'm not going to watch this then. So you revert back to old school, you know, following it on WRC Plus. But one of the things I was getting to there was the fact that one particular section I did put on was right towards the end of the event, and it was Sebastian Ogier I'd go as far as to say he's despondent, which, you know, for a man that's finished fourth, still leading the championship and everything else, right? It was, I'm being unfair here, but it wasn't like he was uninterested. It just looked like he just wasn't engaged at all. You know, it was almost like he just wanted to get this over and done with, especially that foggy stage as well.
Yeah, but I think that is, in some ways, that is, okay, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to cruise around, take the points and move on attitude, isn't it? If he's not right in the fight, which he wasn't prepared to take risks in the fog, and he dropped quite a lot of time because of it, but he's still leading the world championship, and he's still in a great position in the world championship. So I don't know, if you look at it from the other way, is that not just Sebastian Ogier doing what he does best, and when it isn't his weekend, he just cruises around, takes the points, moves on, and then blows everybody away elsewhere? And just to kind of reiterate the point that I just made earlier, my only fear with Toyota would be if they get Ogier. Because the nice thing about the World Championship at the minute, with M Sport still a little bit playing the underdogs, but they've got the best driver in there, it's a great balance. If we saw Sebastian Ogier move to Toyota or move to Hyundai, then I would be worried for the other teams.
Okay. I you know what, I get where you're going, and I don't know whether you've got anything to add to that, Jack, but I still think the Hyundai is not quite the complete package.
Nor was the Fiesta last year, though, until they got.
Okay. And neither is the Toyota either. But, you know, one thing to take away from that rally is that Sebastian Ogier, I don't think he's ever won it, has he? And he's finished second many times. 2013, he was second to Loeb. 2014, he got beat by Latvala. 2016, he got beat off Padden. He's not an event he's won before, and one that he's known for doing particularly well at. So, like Ryan said, you know, this is another case of Sebastian doing the best he can with what he's got, and you know, he scored more good points again. And I don't think we need to cover it much more than the fact that, you know, it's just Ogier being Ogier. But yeah, I'd agree. The thought of a team guided by Sebastian Ogier, not just from a driving point of view, but from a development point of view, with the money that Hyundai and Toyota are able to provide, that would be a terrifying prospect for the championship. And what we've got at the minute is a kind of equilibrium, I think, probably as Ryan explained, where you've got Ogier not in the best car but probably outperforming the car a little bit, and then you've got, you know, you've not quite got the perfect packages with Hyundai and Toyota. So it's kind of, it's all balanced out really evenly at the minute. But the problem with that is the best driver's always going to eventually want to move to the best cars. So yeah, that's I think Ogier at Toyota is a terrifying prospect.
Just before we move away from M Sport, your tip for the event was Elvin Evans, and I don't know. I'm going to ask you first, right? Is there a problem? You know, is you know, were we expecting Elvin to step up a level just because he was on the Michelins and now he's in the first team? You know, was there too much expectancy, or was it the right level of expectancy?
Well, there was certainly expectation there, because obviously last year when the D-Max performed for him, he did brilliantly. I guess, therefore, he was maybe focusing on those rallies where they knew the tyres would work very well. And this year he was getting a consistent package, or he's got a consistent package that his teammate that won the World Championship last year also has. So, yeah, I think there was always going to be expectation that he would be a regular performer and that we'd see him fighting for podiums every rally. You know, that isn't happening. So is there a problem? He needs to find an extra gear, but then he still doesn't have maybe the depth of knowledge of some of his competitors on these rallies, and let's hope that some of his better rallies he can thrive on. I mean, obviously this was a good rally last year, but maybe he had a slight tyre advantage. So yeah, I mean, he's obviously a little bit down on confidence currently, but Malcolm Wilson's the right man to help him there. So let's just hope that he can pick it back up, because it's definitely been a tough start to the season, and then he does need a confidence boost.
Moving swiftly on to the Citroens, where we spoke about it last week, Jack. You know, there was this this press conference that was shared around on social media with the drivers and team management and stuff like that. Mads made some interesting comments with regards to the car being probably slightly harder to drive than the Fiesta. The Fiesta being known for being easy, and obviously Mads has drove them both pretty much back to back. And you know, in the piece that he did with Gary last week on the podcast, he was saying, you know, it's pretty much kind of knife edge type of handling, as it were. There was, as I say, this thing that went out. They thought they were on top of it. Are we just putting again? Are we just back in the realms of Chris Meek just having bad luck and Craig Breen having bad luck? What are we putting it down to?
It's a difficult one, really, isn't it? It's difficult to kind of decide where luck finishes and the car comes into play. But Mika hit a rock in the middle of the road. It's always difficult when not so many other people hit the rock in the road, because it makes that driver look probably worse than they than what's happened. But that's a really tough one, and you know, he reported the rock being right in the middle of the road, and if you can't avoid it, you can't avoid it, and that's just bad luck, isn't it? With Craig, I don't know if it's unfair to say, but it seemed like he was pushing fairly hard and up until the crash. So whether he was just pushing the car too hard in a bid to kind of impress, maybe put a little bit of pressure on himself after Sebastian Loeb had come in and done so well and felt like he needed to make a bit of a benchmark performance after that, you know, that's possible. But you know, it's so difficult, isn't it, when you look at how hard these guys are pushing, and you know, they're trying to keep up with someone like Oit who's going like he is at the front. Mistakes creep in, and it's a very difficult line to draw in rallying as to where the driver error comes in, and a balance of is the car performing properly and is the driver pushing too hard, and the kind of the harmony between the car and driver. So I think it'd be harsh to blame the car for both of those incidents, especially Chris's, because that was just a, you know, sounded like a rock in the road. For Craig, you know, what was there an element of the car performing badly in that crash? Possibly. He didn't seem to mention it at the time, from what I can remember. I think that's more probably him just pushing a little bit too hard and trying to make a bit of an impact on his return.
Right, you've probably been the closest to a situation like this than Jack and I will ever be. You know, you're working with a team and everything else. Obviously, there's ongoing developments. Are they just perennially having bad luck?
Well, they're certainly having more than their fair share of bad luck, and I do think Chris was very unlucky, because his pace was good. Okay, he wasn't on Tanak's pace, but he was on a good, solid podium pace, and then he had the puncture. And I think, like you said, Craig probably. It probably wasn't a conscious thing, but he probably did have a lot of pressure that he put on his own shoulders, because he had a good start to the year. He's been sat out for two rallies, having to watch somebody pedal his car very well, and I'm sure he wanted to come back in with a bang, and his pace was good early on. And then, yeah, maybe he did just try too hard, but I'm sure he did put a lot of pressure on himself, and Chris was unlucky. So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, yes, they've had more bad luck, but you expect these things to equal out over the course of a season, and it just doesn't seem to happen for Citroën at the minute.
No. Just moving on to, obviously, the last team, we're trying to cover all the teams as well. Hyundai lineup, which, you know, Jack, you and I both spoke about last week, about, you know, the why last year's winner was not there. The management seems to have kind of got it right, don't they? You know, maybe they know more than what we do. Well, they probably do. But you know, a 2 and 3 on the podium, Danny driving as well as probably he's ever drove, probably on gravel. Would you have that?
I thought he drove well, but you know, as we just talked about Chris Meek, if Chris Meek hadn't got that puncture, Sordo would have been on the podium. And it's you're getting into dangerous territory in terms of trying to predict where Hayden would have finished, obviously. But I still rather having a proven gravel driver who's an event winner in the past than Danny on that event. That would be my personal preference. But like you said, Danny's come up with the goods there. He's delivered a good performance and scored points at a point where, you know, a lot of the other drivers in the championship might have pushed too hard there, or you know, not sort of maintained the consistency that Danny's able to do. So he's I can understand why anyone would want Danny Sordo in their team, because you know he's not going to threaten for wins, but he is going to score your points and maximise the position he can finish while keeping the car safe. So another Danny Sordo-esque performance, I would call it.
Right, he's probably him and Yari Matti. I think Yari Matti is I don't quite know what. I haven't got the stats in front of me, but Danny's probably the most experienced driver, would you say, in the championship now?
Probably get in there. I think it was a good drive from him. I mean, he was just over a minute off the win, I think, in the end. And if you think in theory he's playing the number three role, he couldn't have done a better job, because yes, Andreas Mikkelsen was maybe quicker, but Andreas had an issue with a puncture as well, and Danny did a fabulous team job. And you know, Thierry Neuville again wasn't on Tanak's pace, but very, very solid performance from him again. And he's putting pressure on Ogier in the championship. So it's, you know, it's shaping up well, because if Tanak can continue this pace, then it could well be a tight three-way fight for the world championship win throughout the season. And you know, it's a while since we've been able to say that, particularly with three different manufacturers involved as well.
This is what Oit did for Sebastian last year, in the sense that he took points away from the other contenders when they were going well. Oit was making sure he was finishing a spot ahead of some of Ogier's main contenders, and that's what Danny's done there. He's pushed Ogier off a podium place. So taking away points from the rivals is as important for the drivers' championship as it is for the manufacturers' championship as well.
No, really, really, really good points. Really, really good points. Just before we move on, we need to mention Andreas. Obviously, a puncture very early on day one, boys. But, you know, again, it to me, just looked like he just wants to get it done and over and done with, Jack. I don't know whether you've seen much of his onboards or his stage ends, but, you know, just wants to kind of get it over and done with a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I think, you know, the puncture was a big blow for him, because he must have, you know, he was going really well on the Friday, and that must have been a real confidence boost for him, and he must have been thinking about, you know, where he was going to finish at that point and getting quite excited about everything. But yeah, the puncture really kind of it really deflated his hopes. Oh, sorry, that's terrible.
Oh, no, no.
A massive pun there by accident.
Yellow card,
yeah.
Jack Benny.
Sorry about it. It wasn't intentional. I did apologise immediately after, in my defence. But yeah, he just really seemed off his game after that puncture, and I think that just took a bit of the wind out of his sails, I think.
Yeah, there you go. Boys, is there anything else we want to mention before we move on to a few other bits and pieces about Rally Argentina? As I say, we always, folks, we always work on the proviso. You clearly know who's won and who's bought. It's just us kind of sharing our thoughts. Rye, have you got anything you want to add to this?
No. I think we've pretty much covered it. I think the other thing is that the manufacturer championship shaping up quite nicely. All right, Citroën a little bit out of it, but you know, any of the other three manufacturers could win the manufacturer's title, and again, as reflected in the drivers' championship, that's nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Rally Portugal a bit later on in May, so I haven't got too long to wait. Obviously, back in Europe, so. It'd be good, as I say. It'd be it's one of those where it'll be. I guess it'll be a leveler. I noticed there was an announcement put out that Craig Breen and Lappi, who's going to do Rally Estonia as a warm up for this one.
It's Padden, isn't it?
Is it Padden? Sorry, yeah, Hayden Padden. Sorry, they're both being sent to do a warm up for this one, which I think is great. I think it's great to see. Obviously, the team's still trying to get them out and get them some seat time and everything else. So, right, I just wanted to move on to a couple of other bits and pieces before, because as ever, I'm really, really, really conscious of time. Where was I going next? We're going to talk about Pirelli a little bit later on. Of course, the opening round of the Prestone MSA British Rally Championship, but. Where was I going to go next?
WRC 2? Were you going to go to WRC 2?
I was going to go, yeah, I was, because Gus was going to be on with us this week, and he's a very, very busy boy. He's got plenty going on, and I was absolutely, I was so, so pleased. You know, I know he went on the long course, the two South American events with the Plan Boys, and the plan was to finish. He had to finish them. And that was kind of the brief that he was given. And I think he's done himself, Jack, just no harm at all, you know, playing the long game and picking up points for second.
Yeah. Yeah, can't argue with his approach. Like you said, I think Malcolm told him that he needed to bring the car home and get some good experience of those events ready for next year, and that's exactly what he did. And there was other people going off and other people, you know, not finding that balance, but he struck it really well, and good pace, but good consistency as well, and made sure the car was safe. So good drive from him.
Right, did you see our friend Callie Rovanperä's escapade into, I don't know whether it was an official car park, but certainly he made his way into it.
Yeah, he did. I don't think all was quite well in the Skoda camp either, was it? Because Pontus Tiedemann, I think, thought that Rovanperä wasn't going to push on was it the second day, and Rovanperä did push and suddenly ended up in the lead, and Tiedemann was biting his lip to try and work out what had happened. But Rovanperä was certainly pushing hard at the end. That was quite a spectacular act. Accident, and unlucky that nobody was hurt in that one,
really. Right, before we move away from WRC, Jack, there's a story that you guys have put out today with regards to the FIA wants WRC privateers. I want to discuss it with Rye, but if you can just tell our listeners what this one's all about.
Oh, you put me on the spot there, haven't you?
Do you want me to do it?
If you've got it in front of you, you can, yeah.
Okay, all right, well. But the FIA has tabled discussions to modify a current World Rally car. Now, whether this is the fact that the 2016 cars weren't really taken up by privateers, Ryan Champion, but they feel that perhaps if a detuning a current spec and put a 34mm restrictor in, will suddenly open the doors to lots of people going, that's now affordable. I'm not convinced.
I do worry about some people in charge in high positions when they think these sort of things, because it won't make any difference to the cost whatsoever. And why? What's the point? They're too fast. Okay, is that going to slow them down in the corners then? They've still got all this aero. You can still go around a corner at the same speed. It just might mean they accelerate a little bit slower. So I don't get this at all. I can't see how putting a 34mm restrictor in them will encourage anybody else to compete on the WRC with them, because it's the cost of the things that's the problem. And that cost will still be there regardless of what restrictor you put in it. I do think that we might see, if they allow the cars to run out of WRC with a 34mm restrictor, then we'll see an increased number of the cars in action on a weekly basis, because there will be people out there that want to do national level rallying with them. But in terms of encouraging privateers in WRC, you could put any restrictor you want in them, and unless it makes any difference to the cost, it's not going to make any difference to how many people use them.
Jack Benyon, we've got nothing to add to that, have we?
Not only have they not solved the problem of the fact that the cars are too expensive, they've added the problem of completely offending anyone who wants to be a privateer in the WRC by saying that they're going to put the restrictor on it.
Yeah, good point.
yeah, absolutely.
It's an
point.
Absolute joke.
And not only that, if anybody wanted to drive one, it'd be like, oh, I'd like to have a go in one of these 400 horsepower World Rally. Oh, no, you can't. Sorry about that. You can drive, but you can drive a slower one, but still spend the same money.
Plus, the cost of the car is so much more than what a 2015-2016 WRC car would have been. Not only have they not solved the cost problem, the cost problem has gone up massively because the new cars are so much more expensive.
Yeah.
We don't like that idea.
No, we don't. Terrible. We don't. One little story, Jack, that you guys have put in today. You mentioned it before that there's a story with regards to Toyota looking for more power, perhaps, from their engine. But there's a little side note story on that particular piece with regards to Tommy Mäkinen confirming a possible agreement to run Nasser Al-Attiyah on four rounds of this year's WRC is stalled. The Finn admitted he was willing to consider a potential for hiring a Yaris WRC to a private driver, but the focus very much remained on the factory team. I think that's a shame.
Do you think they've told him he can only have a 34mm restrictor?
Probably, yeah. You ruined it. That's where I was going.
NASA's good enough to have a proper restrictor, I think.
Yeah, I think so. That's it from kind of those bits and pieces. Believe it or not, boys, we're heading well over time already. So, there's a couple of bits and pieces of admin I want to do. Volkswagen have delayed the homologation of their R5. I think it's a great shame, but right, I'm guessing if it's not right, there's no point putting it out there.
No, I mean, and they've got a massive development program for that car. Like, they're testing it constantly. It will be the most thoroughly tested R5 car when that makes its debut. So there'll be some reason behind it, and as and when it comes, it will be the best R5 car. That I have no doubt. So they'll continue testing it, continue developing it, and as and when it comes, it will be a winner, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Speaking of R5 cars, it's also the next round of ERC this weekend. Unfortunately, friend of the show, we were going to have him on, but he was a little bit tied up doing a pre-event test. And unfortunately, on that pre-event test, Chris Ingram had a schoolboy error. I don't know whether we've all seen the video. I think you've seen it, haven't you, Ray?
Yes, it was. It looked like it hurt, that one. Well, not physically hurt, but I mean, it hurt the car. But fair play to the team to get it turned around and repaired and back together as quickly as they did.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. We'll try and get Chris on next week anyway, and he can tell us all about it. And hopefully, he'll be telling us about a great result on Rally Canaria anyway. So, for folks, I'm sure you know how to stay up to date with that. Obviously, you've got Rally Radio as well on ERC, which of course with Julesy and Chris Rawls as well. So you'll be able to keep up to date with all that. We're at the point of other bits of admin before we go to any other business, boys. We've mentioned the ERC. We've done that. It's also the Manx National this weekend. I still call it the Manx National, Ryan Champion.
I agree. Still the Manx National.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. Jack Benny, can you still relate to that? Do you still see it as the Manx National?
The Manx National is the 11th and the 12th.
There's the 11th and the 12th. Is it? I thought it was this weekend.
I'm pretty sure it's the 11th and the 12th, which is the weekend after. It's Killarney and Irish Tarmac this weekend.
You're right. Sorry, okay. My bad. Yeah, no, thanks for correcting me. Now, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Hyundai goes on that as well, because Eugene Donnelly, of course, is back out in the Hyundai. It's the Hyundai that Keith Cronin used on the opening round of the Pirelli Ryan Champion. Were you shocked to see the finishing? I think everybody thought that perhaps Keith was going to be a shoo-in coming back as a four-time multiple champion, of course, finishing third to Matt Edwards and Reese. And were you shocked? Did you think that car was going to be perhaps a little bit more suited, especially on the Michelins?
Honestly, I don't know, because it's difficult to say how good that car is at the minute. It doesn't seem to. It's not been a consistent winner, has it? Put it that way. You know, it's not. Hyundai hasn't come in like the Skoda did and been consistently winning rallies in R5. So, no, I was interested, like everybody else, to see how Keith would go on with it. I don't know how much testing he's done. Probably not enough, I would imagine. But it does seem like it's not an easy car maybe to get to work consistently. So, I'm sure he'll get quicker during the year. But he took his fourth title last year, but he wasn't dominant last year either. So, he's going to have to get confident and get comfortable with that Hyundai if he wants to mount a challenge this year. But I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll be very competitive. But like I said, I still haven't quite worked out just how fast that Hyundai is yet.
No, there's 25 of them out, I think. I think there's 25 currently being sold. And I think most of them are on tarmac. I think the guy, one of the engineers, and I've said this on the podcast before, I know I have an on repeat myself, and I think I might have said it to you guys. I think one of the main guys behind it is an ex-Arbath guy. So there's a lot of them gone into Italy, obviously doing tarmac over there. So I think perhaps using someone like Keith for the experience for development on gravel as well, I think it'll be invaluable to them, Jack.
Yeah, but I think Keith's not been particularly quick on gravel for two seasons now, and I don't know if that's I don't really know exactly what that is, but it's, you know, Keith last year was not quick on either of the two gravel rounds and picked up his points on the tarmac event. So for me, all you have to do is look at that event last year where Tom Cave was fastest on the first two stages in the I-20. So the pace of the car is there. And that was when Frederick Arlen was competing as well. So Tom Cave was very, very quick in that car last year on that event. So I agree, the Hyundai, I don't think it's sussed. It seems like they've got an update for it. And maybe that's going to, you know, push things forward. But it's a combination of things. I'm not convinced Keith's quite as quick as he was on gravel, or there's something not quite working for him at the minute that is hurting his pace a little bit on gravel.
Well, I do know he's going to have a brand new car for Ypres in the rest of the season. So that car's going to stay with Eugene, and he's going to have a brand new car for the rest of the season. Anyway, boys, we are now at any other business. Who wants to go first?
I don't mind going first.
Okay, you go first, Jack Bengen.
Two very quick things for me. The first one was I thought the pace on the BRC was a real surprise, because Matt Edwards, Rhys Yates, well, Keith, probably aside from that, not kind of people we've seen at the front of the order, particularly on especially on gravel events. And both Rhys and Matt, pretty inexperienced in R5 cars. Well, maybe Rhys, maybe not, but he's starting his fourth full year of rallying, so still fairly new to the game, really, in that sense. But I thought the pace was brilliant, and I think you only need proof to see how quick those guys were going at the front by looking at Peter Taylor, who's in sixth. I think Peter in a world rally car Fiesta is a prospect that should be competing for any national rally win, and he was down in sixth, and he had a bit of tyre issues, and he wasn't quite completely happy with the car, but he was 3 minutes 56 seconds down on the winner. So I think there was more to come from Peter, and I think he will be disappointed with where he was at. But also I think that gap shows sort of pace at the front there is pretty good. So that was one thing I thought was worth pointing out as a bit of a benchmark in terms of how quick those guys are going. And also there's an event on this weekend. Sorry to go a bit British centric, but the Speed and Rally Show is on this weekend at Oswestry Street Showground, and that event has some Motoring News Road Rally champions in a forum, and it also has a 2-day road rally called the Border 200, and I think that's going to be fantastic. And if I was free this weekend, that's exactly where I'd be going.
And it turns out I'm actually there doing it.
Are you actually going?
Yeah, I'm doing it.
It's going to be so cool. And to have a two-night road rally is going to be awesome.
I'm not doing the road rally, but we're taking the car there, and we're doing some big skids. We're leaving it in gravel spec and doing some big skids.
I imagine your R2 isn't eligible for a road rally.
No, probably not. Probably not. I could have done it in something period. I don't know.
But Elvin Evans is there as well, so that's on the Sunday. So yeah, I think if you're around and you're not far from Oswestry Street, it's fairly centrally based in terms of where it is. Get yourself down there and have a watch.
Well, that's going to be on my Any Other Beat, so you stole mine, so we'll go straight to Ryan Champion.
Well, I'll start off my Any Other Business with a bit of a thank you to former British Championship runner and ERC runner as well, Alex Parpotters, who got me out of a bit of a pickle the other night when I managed to get two punctures on my car trailer, and he loaned me two wheels, so thanks very much, Alex, for that. I was actually busy taking my Mitsubishi to Dover for shipping to Rally Barbados, so firstly, glad to get the Mitsubishi back in one piece. Did love shake down with it the other day, and I'll see it again in 3 weeks' time in the Caribbean.
There you go. Tough old world that Ryan Champion lives in, isn't it?
I'm not going this year either.
Tough old world. I'm not going either. I've never been. Maybe I need to go. I won't go this year, though. Anyway, folks, that's it, boys. Are you back with us next week? It'll be slightly more succinct and probably a little bit more relaxed next week. I'm just really conscious that we've got loads coming up in the rest of the podcast. So, Ryan, are you back with us next week? Happy days. Jack Bengen?
I'm TBC at this moment in time. Oh. I'm very sorry to say, it depends what day we're doing next week, but yeah, I may or may not be around next week.
Okay, alright, well, Jack Bengen's playing art together.
No, not at all. To be confirmed.
Folks, you need to tune in next week to see whether Jack Bengen's actually turned up.
Yes, get in, he's gone, we're sick of him, can't stand his voice, he's useless, he knows nothing about rallying, get rid of him.
You read my notes, don't you?
Yeah, sorry.
Right, folks, thank you, as I say, for the download. It is an epic podcast this week. We're going to go to a little break, then we're going to come back with Dean Herridge over in Australia. And there's a man who knows how to pedal a Subaru.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Now, if you used to listen to Absolute Rally in its previous guise a number of years ago, and I do realise that some of you are still knocking about, we used to have a man down under, and his name was Cody Crocker. Cody Crocker missing in action at the moment, but we got the next best thing. In fact, some people may say it's actually a better option. Not being on before, he's going to be a friend of the show, I can tell. Dean Herridge, welcome to Absolute Rally for the first time.
Thank you very much, mate. I can't believe that my teammate, former teammate Crocker, was your man down under. Because I've made a career of coming second to him, I think, just about my whole life. So,
well, you know, as I say, it wasn't until we started talking about having you on, and I was thinking, who do we? And it's Cody Crocker. Cody Crocker. Well, to be fair, we called him Cody Crocker, mate, because it was just easier with Cody Crocker, mate.
Yeah.
And that was our really, really poor attempt at being Australian.
An Australian humour, but still a very good mate of mine. And if he's listening, I have to be very careful. So we keep in contact. Absolutely. I'll say good day for you.
Good man, good man. Listen, we had Molly on the other week. We do try and kind of cover the Australian Rally Championship. We try to cover all the different bits and pieces. But you're the man on the mic at the moment. I've seen you interviewing people and everything else. We had the second round of the Australian Rally Championship. And again, just for me, because I'm not very, very bright, the format of the Australian Rally Championship runs in legs, doesn't it?
Essentially, yeah, heats, would you believe. So our sprint rounds are a traditional round that doesn't get influenced by an international event. Is done over heat. So effectively 2 days, heat one and heat two. So heat one, once the results locked down, points are allocated and we restart heat two fresh. It gets a bit complicated when we have dual events with international. We then have legs and heat points and everything else. But the good news is the start of the season, Ballarat's been and gone. When you spoke to Molly, we've just had round two over here in Perth or West Australia, and it's, like you said, effectively two heats. You lock it down each day. So simple at the moment.
Now, there was a big thing that happened at the weekend. And the reason why I was kind of watching from afar, obviously, the APRC program for the MRF Skodas that's kind of been disbanded this year. And I was wondering what was going to happen with those cars. And then all of a sudden, after, I suppose, years of people flirting with the idea, we had some R5s rock up. Now, that must have created a little bit of a stir.
Well, not only did it create a stir, I don't think anyone saw it coming because Ballarat, everything seemed fairly normal. We had our normal sort of, fight at the top and it was really close. You know, we've got the development of the AP4 car with Batesy, former champs and Subaru Do Motorsport are back with Molly. Steve Glennie, a name that's sort of come back in a fast car. Eli trying to develop the Mini and then a couple of local fast guys like Glenn Raymond. It looked like, wow, how good is this? Five guys and girls fighting over, you know, split seconds. And then Adrian Coppen, who had sort of leased a car off Race Talk in the guise of the Peugeot, I'm not sure if it's a Proto or an AP4 car essentially, to that. There was a bit of a deal done for him to swap out to an R5 car, so that was sort of expected and we knew he'd step up from that point of view. But what blindsided most of us was that obviously we had the former champion Eli Evans rock up in the second car, effectively, or the spare car. And that deal was done quite late, I think within a week of the event. So, you know, it rocked up to Rally Week and some teams were across, you know, driving across the Nullarbor and all of a sudden the Mini was parked or left back in Melbourne and Eli and Ben rock up and get the keys to the Skoda, which obviously everyone sort of was a little bit shocked at.
I think everybody would love the keys to the Skoda, wouldn't they? I think it's, if you had a choice of R5 cars at the moment, and this is something which we often debate on this podcast, and I think probably around the pub as well, if you could have any R5 car at the moment, it probably would be the Skoda, and I think probably those Skodas are probably right on the edge of the development as well. So of all the cars they could have got, it's possibly the best one out there.
And with someone like Eli, who's a former champ and an absolute great steerer, to jump in a Race Talk car, I mean, they are the MRF team from the last decade, so they know, you know, the brands and the tyres very well. It was just a shoo-in. It was probably a very easy transition for that whole team. Of course, the Australian Championship runs on MRF as a control tyre. So, what it means for the future, I don't know, but I guess you could, if you're in the excitement camp, fantastic. First time we see those cars running in our series on those tyres, and it was fantastic. They look great, they sound great, they go great. It put pressure on the likes of obviously Harry and the Neil Bates team who were developing that car and had all sorts of issues late last year. It had pace, but obviously, it lacked a bit of reliability. It came to them at Ballarat and they, of course, nailed home the win. And anyone who was in sort of more of a production-based car, or what we call PRC over here, although there's extra freedoms, it was going to be interesting to see where our car stood in that lineup as well. So, yeah, Forest Rally over here, round two, was interesting big time before it even started.
Well, I suppose we could go through it stage by stage, but I think as you say, Eli pretty much had an easy run through. But for me as well, when I kind of seen the results coming in and I seen you interviewing the guys and stuff, is that the podium was quite interesting because, of course, every category you've just mentioned there, R5, AP4 and PRC, were all represented. Now, the question is, were they represented in the right order?
Potentially not. Probably the person who did the most solid job, in my mind. I mean, like I said, Eli walked away with it, as he probably should have done, and etc. Steve Glennie, I think, did an excellent job. I mean, that car is an unbelievably light, very well-sorted car, and obviously he had a great round one. I thought he did a fantastic job. Harry obviously was under a little bit more pressure, made a mistake on the Saturday, and then obviously put pay to his weekend. And you had Molly, who obviously struggled as well. I never got to ask her, and she may not have told me exactly what was going on Saturday, but she just lacked pace. And then all of a sudden Sunday, she popped back up to begin the fight again. So by the time it all sort of, as you said, sifted out and points were allocated, you know, Eli at the top of the rung, you know, Harry very strong second day, Molly a strong second day, Glennie probably had the strongest weekend, and that's sort of why I think he now sits in that second position in the championship, only leapfrogged by Eli after the weekend.
So is there any more words on, you know, because as you say, first round of the championship, we had Molly on just after, unfortunately, she'd had possibly the most Australian accident I think she could have had on that rally.
One of our cars had the same accident on the weekend. If you're an Australian and you've been rallying for a while, I reckon nearly everyone has hit a kangaroo at some point in their rally career, so.
Poor Roo. But as you said, it was all kind of level playing field. These new cars have come out. Do we know anything more about whether Adrian's going to be running this car for the rest of the year, or is it just a one-off, will Eli be back?
It's more likely that Adrian may run it. I'm not on the inside of that stuff, to be fair, but, I mean, Adrian, you should have seen him when he drove the car. He was like a Cheshire cat. He bloody the smile from ear to ear. Why wouldn't you? So I think he'd be pretty keen to retain that, and I think definitely when they rock up in Canberra, that's his home event, he'd be keen to put a good showing on there. So I'd say nearly a given that the deal would have been done to include Canberra, no doubt. Eli, it sort of makes sense that he would do, and he now leads a championship and it's an easy transition. But I have a feeling in the back of my head, and I might be totally wrong because, like I said, I'm not part of that team or program, but I think that when you've started a project and they've invested the money, I don't think they'll just shelve the Mini for the sake of it. Pete Evans, the father, and I guess the guy who backs the program most, he's probably keen just to go, look, I want results, let's just hire the car again. But I think as a driver, and Eli's a four-time champ, he's been there and done it, he's driven lots of cool cars, I think just rocking up in the fastest car and winning the rallies is not what it's all about for him. I think he likes the idea of being able to develop something that they've got some ownership in, and that has been a struggle for them, and try and succeed in that car and not take the easy route. So I don't know. I mean, one way or another, in a month or so, we'll work it out. But don't be surprised if he doesn't necessarily take that Skoda, unless there's a really demon deal being done in regards to money, a deal they just can't refuse. Because I think Eli personally, as a driver, I think would like the idea of trying to have some success with that Mini, particularly after the time and effort that he and the team have put into that so far.
I followed it with interest, because I genuinely, when they first announced they were doing something with a Mini, of course, it must be 2 years ago, maybe? Have I got that right?
I think I've got the timeline of that right. He admitted that he hasn't won a rally for 2 years since they've had that car. It's just been, anyone who's been in and around the sport for a while will know, when you are building something from the ground up, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of commitment. It's, you know, you are doing all the R&D. These R5 cars that we talk about that are magnificent have thousands and thousands of kilometres and you know, probably in some cases millions of dollars of development done in that you take advantage of. So to be an Australian team, chipping in and every dollar making a difference and almost learning on events is really hard yakka. So you know, from that point of view, yeah, it's been a couple of years and pretty thin pickings for them so far.
I thought, do you know what? I was surprised that, bearing in mind they were building an AP4 car, I genuinely thought in my head it would have been like the Countryman. That would have been obviously what the WRC, what ProDrive built. So when I seen it was the small two-door one, I was thinking, geez, there's a lot of equipment they're going to try and get under that shell. That's brave in every sense of the word.
And we've all been there. I think there was supposed to be a bigger deal done at some point. I feel like it was one of those things that we have a saying, it's a free opportunity to spend a lot of money. I think the idea was, here's a car that's been effectively given by BMW Mini. For some reason, the deal maybe didn't follow all the way through, and they were sort of halfway through the build and go, well, we've got it now, we might as well continue with it. And you know, maybe if the deal hadn't fallen in place the right way, they may have just shelved the idea fairly early. So, like you said, you are then pioneering, and there's, even around the world, not too many things that just slot straight into a car like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, we're two rounds in, as we've just said. Obviously, Eli's heading up the championship. We've got, is it another four rounds to go? It's a six-round championship,
isn't it, for you guys? We've had one added. Tasmania's back on the radar. So, I mean, for a series that's effectively supported by privateers, a few of them have, it's a difficult thing to go for an extra round, particularly when you've got that piece of water between us and the mainland. But normally the Tassie roads have been fantastic, and I think it's going to be a well-supported event, which is great. So it is good for the series. So effectively Canberra rocks up next, which doubles as an APRC round. We have South Australia and then Tasmania back to that sort of super series format, we call it, or with the heats. And then, of course, our grand finale tying in with the WRC, they seem to be an endurance round. So, still four rounds to go, plenty of points, plenty of days worth of rallying. So it is very early days, but you can start to see how it is all formulating.
Yeah. Do you know what, Dean? You've been around the job longer than me, right? There must have been a time where, obviously, to go from the Australian Championship, you probably would have won at APRC. That would have been, and maybe over in and did some stuff in China, very similar to kind of career path to what you had. It's a bit of a weird scenario now, isn't it, with APRC? Because now probably your national championship is probably stronger than APRC. So the aspirational driver, where we think about the younger drivers, you know, we know Molly's obviously been over in Europe, and obviously, you know, I'm sure Harry would give his left arm to come over and do stuff in Europe. But where's the next kind of phase, do you think, for your young drivers?
You're exactly right, because the normal step up was Asia Pacific, and I remember back before I probably even started driving, or in the very early days, you know, you did have Pro Driver, Mitsubishi and all, and Ford, and that rock up and do Asia Pacific. You know, and that's why you've got the names of Ericsson and McRae and Sainz, who have their name on the APRC trophy. So, you know, now that you've got a distinct difference with, you know, the European side, the World Championship side, the Asia Pacific's been in a bit of a struggle depth-wise for a while. You get some amazing drivers and teams there, but it just doesn't have the depth that goes down the field. So, maybe with MRF pulling out. I mean, I know now Cusco will almost become the key or the team to beat, and then you'll have some fast local guys potentially. So, I mean, maybe it ignites some people to try and try and do the Asia Pacific and get some recognition outside of Australia and in the Asian region, because maybe. I'm not sure, because like you said, there's no real transition apart from us all wanting and loving to go to Europe, but it's such a big step. And when we go over there, no one knows us from a bar of soap. So I think Asia Pacific is still the logical step, and trying to get some support to do things like New Zealand and China when there's the possibilities in those championships and stuff like that. So I still think it's good for young drivers to go that way, because it's still probably a necessary step to get some experience outside of your homeland and then use that to try and then go to Europe if there's a chance to go. But, you know, timing's critical and being at the right age, and, you know, probably Hayden Patton's a case in point with that as well.
Do you know what? There's a name that's kind of come up over the last week or so, and when I think of Australian rallying, when I think of APRC, probably more than ever, was Possum Bourne.
Yes, yeah.
And you just think about, obviously it's obviously the anniversary of his passing and everything else. You've got heritage, obviously, with the Subaru brand. He was another man who had heritage with it. So did you encounter Possum much? Did you go toe-to-toe with him at all?
Well, we were, as it turns out, I mean, I think with Subaru's tenure in the Australian Championship, since Subaru backed Possum in the early days with Team Subaru back in, I think, 1992, my father ran teammates with him in those early couple of years when they had the yellow legacies running around. And then I basically joined the team in 2002 after doing a year with Les Walkden. So I was a teammate of his and Cody's as the third car and the junior driver through 2002-2003. And then obviously that's sort of when when the accident happened and stuff. So we were directly being involved and around him through those years. So I was affected by that, and he was obviously a great ambassador for our sport, not just in New Zealand, but I think we made him one of our own. I mean, it's ironic that our Australian Championship trophy is the Possum Bourne Memorial Trophy, yet he's a Kiwi. So that sort of shows how much he meant over here, and he won seven championships, which is still the record, obviously. So we're all the richer for having being influenced by him, but particularly, you know, myself and Cody, effectively when all that was happening, it was up to he and I to step up and try and take over the reins, and there were some key people back in the workshop and Possible Motorsport and those guys still ran our team until basically Subaru, withdrew from the championship at the end of 05. So, even from the early days when my father drove for them, etc., I was influenced at a younger age and then found myself lucky that, I was able to be a teammate of his over the time, so...
Wow. I'm a proper Anoraki rally fan and it's a shame Ryan's not on with the course. Ryan's got, one of the X-Works Group A Subarus. Not that he mentions it very often. Sorry, that's a bit of a dig, bit of an in-joke that I've got with Ryan at the moment, but he's got one of the X-Works cars. And over in Europe, the privateers were probably Bertie Fischer on tarmac. You kind of think of him. In a Group A car, a privately run. But I always think also of Possum Bourne on gravel, because there wasn't, I suppose the internet's changed, how we view rally and I suppose social media and everything else. But, to see a picture of a Group A car or a works, a works type car, World Rally car or whatever, not in the works livery was always a bit of a big deal for me. It's like, oh, what's the story behind that? And that's what I always remembered. It was always obviously very similar because you had that iconic blue, but obviously, the way it was kind of, I think, was it Valvoline? Does that ring true as a sponsor of Possum Bourne?
I think what you're thinking of is probably like 1990. He had Castrol sponsorship. He had a white car with Castrol down the side with the red and almost black stripes, which he did run here in Australia once and the New Zealand round of the championship. So, like you said, it was pretty cool to see, that RS Turbo back in the day running with that guys. And, of course, before Subaru went to the blue and I guess catch on with the 555 even here in Australia with the – we had, the blue cars with the yellow and everything else. The Team Subaru cars that ran the Legacies were actually chrome yellow with blue sort of splashes down the side. So, we were in a fortunate position, like I said, with Dad being a teammate. Dad's original RS Turbo that he won the championship in BP colours was then sent on the tour to be a display car, painted yellow, and to this very day it still holds that same yellow, and the old man still owns that car and it sits in a museum here in Perth, so we'd love to put it to one of the liveries of either the BP or maybe even the replica to the chrome yellow. So in the early days before we knew Subaru to be purely that blue, it was yellow, believe it or not, over here in Australia.
Wow. There you go.
I wasn't even planning to talk to you about that.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Listen, Dino, we could talk for hours and we already have before we even started doing this. So I'm going to have to bid you good day because I don't even know. It's probably tea time for you now and it's lunchtime for me. So
indeed, mate. It's night time over here in Perth. So I've stayed back especially for you to have this chat, mate. So I'm in my office like you are, but you've got the rest of the day to go. I'm about to head off to the family.
Good man. Listen, Dino, thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch up with you again soon, yeah?
Yeah, look forward to it, mate. It'll be awesome.
Spot on. Dean Hedricks, thanks for joining us on Absolute Rally, folks. We'll be back after this break.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Welcome back to a friend of the show. We've not had him on for a little while. A man who wears two hats, two very distinctive hats as it happens. One being a BRC manager and one also with his involvement in Wales Rally GB. And it was a really good time to get Ian Campbell on. Hello, Ian Campbell.
Hello, Tony. Good to hear from you. And especially with the wind that's up here today in Inverness, I'm needing the two hats to keep my head warm.
Right, you're home now and you're rested. Following on from it would have been the second round of obviously the Prestone MSA British Rally Championship. Of course, it was the opening round, the Pirelli, one of our favourite events, a very condensed event. We've spoke about that before we started. A lot went on in one day, really, didn't it?
It did indeed. And, before you say it's one day, the first day started at 11:58. It was relaxed in the morning because it was the start at the Pirelli factory. But 84 competitive miles. And the bit that got me was the percentage from competition stage miles to road miles was something like 81%, which is just phenomenal. You don't get that really on any other events. When the guys started, that was them. They were flat out. The two 20-minute breaks, I think, for servers, but the road sections were so short. It was fantastic to get the season started and to get back out with the bright yellow Prestone flags and get the banners going and to see the guys out in the stages.
Now, for obviously, we have overseas listeners. We have listeners all over shop, as they say, all over shop. It's been... an exciting start for. I've got two heroes of the rally, and I feel like I'm kind of jumping forward even beyond the results at the moment. But there's two heroes of the rally for me, and both in the definitive categories. One being in the R5 category, which is, of course, is Matt Edwards getting his first international win, and the other being Steve Rockland in the junior section. Two drivers that I've known for many, many years, being around them, and you know, they're still relatively young men, which makes me feel really, really old saying that. But for you, was it a breath of fresh air to get two new winners? Because that's always exciting, isn't it, to get two new winners?
It was good. I mean, if we go to Steve Rockland, it was fantastic to see him coming over from Norway. He did say that the Kielder stages suited his driving style because they were quite similar to home, and that they're, you know, very fast, top speed, taking a lot of commitment to carry through the very slight kinks and such like that there were in Kielder. He just went out and just set the stages alight from the junior perspective. The guys that were battling for second and third were really fighting over tenths and seconds throughout, and Marty Gallagher and Josh McCarlin were really into that battle, and then both retired on stage seven. So it kept it going from there, but Steve was very, very calm throughout the day. Tom Woodburn, Woody, who was sitting beside him, was delighted. And I know that the two of them have worked hard to get that drive and to bring the car over. So it was nice to see them start off their campaign that strongly, but especially when he played as Joker as well. And then for overall win for Matt, he's another man that's worked extremely hard to get into that seat and to get this opportunity. And he did say, and he tried to say it without sounding big-headed in any way, he said it was actually quite a comfortable victory. He didn't feel stressed in the car. He didn't feel like he was pushing it. Both him and Darren just said that it came quite naturally, the pace to them. So it was good to see that. It was good to see that Pirelli got a victory on their own event with their own product. So that, you know, that ticked all of the boxes for them.
You've just touched upon something which I think was kind of missed in the lead up to this, and this is nothing against your PR department in any way, shape or form, Mr. Campbell. But one thing we talked about last week was the tyre war, because of course you look at your top three, and we're not Johnny Come Latelys on this one. We actually predicted this, that you look at your top three and you've got Pirelli,
Michelin,
and
Kumho.
Yeah. Top four. Yeah. So yeah. You know, you've got your tyre war happening, which I think is great. I think the story of the tyre war this year, I think, is going to be fascinating. You know, many people will say that tarmac, you pick a Michelin, but you know, gravel, you go Pirelli. I just think there's so many stories and twists and turns already about to happen. And obviously the other thing about the top four there that we had, obviously there was two Skodas, there was a high-end eye, and there was a Fiesta. So you know, we've also got the battle of the marks as well.
Tony, I'm just going to sit here and keep quiet now, because you're doing a cracking job for me. But yes, it was very, very good competition. It was disappointing that David Bogie went out on stage one, because that would have put the other element with the DMAC tyres into the competition as well. So just to know where his pace was. And Rhys Yates was his last stage time. I said it to Rhys, surprised me. It was fantastic to see, and great to see him get his second place. So things are good. The competition has been close, and even in the cadets class, that battle was changing throughout the day as well. And it was good that can already see that they're fairly close to each other. It's one that's going to, as you say, make the story keep going to the end of the season.
Do you know what? Because we joked about the second, the difficult second album, which would have been last year, and of course we were coming to this year. There's a lot of new faces, which I think is great. You know, obviously we know we've just been talking about Matt, we've been talking about Steve Rockland, but you know, you're looking around. I was a little bit concerned for the juniors when you've seen there was, you know, certain, you know, you look at what Cameron's gone and done, for instance, Cameron Davis has gone over to Portugal and Nabil has gone over with him, and, you know, there's different people going to do different things. And I genuinely looked at also, you know, the BTRDA category over here in the UK, and, you know, I was stupid enough to buy an R2 car, and I've been doing, you know, I've done a couple of BTRDA rounds this year, and there's 10 R2 cars doing that as well, and I thought, well, you know, is that going to be the place that people are going to take R2 cars? But clearly not. You've got,
we're sitting on juniors, between juniors and cadets, with 21 registrations, which is fantastic. Nabila is coming back to do British Rally Championship rounds. She couldn't do the Pirelli because it clashed with the event she did in Portugal. So Alex Waterman and Harry Thomas, it just shows how old I am, is that they're both sitting doing their dissertations just now for university that have got to be handed in this week. So they couldn't do the event either. They very sensibly went and parked this round, so they could get that work done.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's very encouraging to see. It was like a start of a new term at school, or a new term at school on Friday, because we're meeting everybody for the first time. It's new faces, new colour schemes, new overalls, but it's, you know, it's good to see, and you know, maybe, you know, the R2 cars are there, that we know they're quick, we know they're strong, and we know the competition's good amongst them.
It's really been a breath of fresh air for me. Genuinely, you know, I looked at how many cars were out, you know, the championship we're doing this year, and I thought, is that going to have a knock-on effect? And it's kind of gone the other way. You know, there's a lot of R2 cars out there, and there's a lot of, you know, obviously the youngsters are taking them up. It seems to be the entry level now, which to me is scary as well. That it's almost deemed to be an entry level car now. I'm thinking, you know, geez, I wish I had that as an entry level car back in the day.
But then, you know, we had the MSA Academy coaches with us on Friday, so, you know, we had a session with the juniors and with the cadets, which was going over how you prep for an event, how you debrief after the event as well, and it was going through, you know, the opportunity they have for British Rally Championship is to, you know, to make their own notes. It's got the longer stage distance. You get access to the MSA Academy coaches and such like, and that's what a lot of these guys were coming on to, was that it's that they're seeing that the sport is something that, if you are, like my son plays football with Ross County, and he's got to do so many hours per week of touching a football so that when it comes to the game, he's good. But on rallying, you know, it's very, very hard to get that time behind the wheel, because of access to land, cost, and all these sort of things. So it's all the other prep that you can do beforehand that will mean that you have that extra edge when it actually comes to the marshal shouting go at the start of a stage. And it was great. I mean, the session was deliberately quite short. It was only about 40 minutes because it was a night before the event. But it's, if, you know, if they can come away and pick up some things from that, that's the sort of thing that will make a difference to these guys going forward as well. And it's also like we debuted or trialled some tracking at the weekend as well. And one of the big things about the tracking was that Kielder, as you know, Tony, is notorious for being a communications black hole for mobile phone signal and such like.
Yeah.
But the data was stored in the tracking units, you know, whether it was sending a signal or not, which actually was fairly good over the weekend. But now that data has been uploaded for our competitors, and they can sit at home and go through stage two. And, you know, Josh McCarlin can go, well, I took 5 seconds out of William Crichton in that stage. Where did I do it? Was it in the fast sections, the twisty sections, whichever? And you can actually set the two cars off at the same time on the stage map and see where he gains, where he loses. And it's getting that extra bit of work that's going into it.
That's mega. That is a really well-kept secret that you haven't bragged about enough, as far as I'm concerned.
We trialled it at the weekend. It was something that we did keep quite low-key, for the obvious reason that we had no idea how it was going to work.
Yeah.
I have apologised to the tracking company Open Tracking because it worked far better than I anticipated. I've choked on my bit of humble pie there. But now we've got this feature, and we'll keep rolling that out. And it keeps adding to what is available to the crews.
It's something which, again, technology and development and everything else, we all moves on. Ultimately, the sport is still the sport. You're still driving a car on a stage as quickly as possible, and it doesn't matter whether that's 50 years ago, whether it's today. But like you just said, you know, talking about development and working with drivers and, you know, fitness and diet and no preparation, these are all the things that probably didn't happen 50 years ago. You know, everybody does have a level of professionalism now, which I find it does make me smile. It's good to see. You know, you should take it seriously, but you should also do it with a smile. And you've got one of your young drivers who was out of the weekend, who unfortunately I think came a cropper on Stakes 7 as well. He has got to go down. Fred Field is going to go down as possibly one of the funniest drivers on Twitter.
Superb.
Seek him out, and he gets it right. He gets it right. I know how he goes about his rally, and then, you know, obviously his family and stuff like that, they do it right, but he does it with a smile. And, you know, he's done some events with us this year as well. And I must admit, his Twitter feed from the Pirelli at the weekend proper made me giggle out loud. So,
And that's, you know, as you say, we've got to get that balance. But if we can give them the tools, it's up to the crews to pick up the tools and to make them work for them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we've got a bit of downtime now. The next round is Ypres, which is just phenomenal to even say that out loud. Your next round is Ypres.
49 days away.
49 days and counting. What happens between now and 48 days?
Now and 48 days, we've got preparation for Ypres coming up. We've got, the data stuff that we need to get to the crews. We've got our television highlights program coming out this weekend, of the time I've still to be confirmed to me, but we'll get that through all our channels so everybody can see the action that's come out from there. And then, you know, it's the usual things of keeping the championship going, keeping the interest there. And working with all the crews, and then, you know, making sure that everybody knows about British Rally Championship, knows about Preston, can see what they're doing with their guys, with Henry Catchpole and Luke Barry, their roving reporters that have been out and about, and just, you know, adding to it from there.
Again, do you know, this sounds like I'm just basically Crawley bum licking on this one. I'm genuinely not. I give Ian a hard time at the best of times. But
you do.
But Henry and Ben, I've really enjoyed their stuff. And I've always enjoyed Henry's stuff anyway, because Henry, again, brings his own personality to stuff. And yeah, you know, it was great to see those guys doing stuff. I watched a little on board. I think that Ben did with you, sat alongside you, going through one of the stages with the bottles of champagne clanking behind you, things like that. Again, it just adds that human element to it. It'll make people smile. It's just a bit of a giggle as well.
Absolutely. That's what we try to do. It's all got to be fun.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, we could go on and on and on, but I really wanted to talk. Can you put your other hat on for me now? Can we pause and put your other hat on?
I will take off my Preston beanie, which you can get on PrestonVRCShop.com, and put on my Dane Shore Wales Rally GB one.
There you go. Let's make sure we get the right sponsor in. The Dane Shore Wales Rally GB. There was a little bit of a delay, but the route has been announced. I've seen some mixed responses, and I've seen some amazing responses. And I guess for you guys, it was something that you were passionate and really, really wanted to make happen, and that's why there was the delay, I'm guessing.
We have worked hard on the route, and, you know, personally very excited by the route and about the changes and the way it's been revamped. And also, you know, I've had a look on the reaction to the route, and it's great because it's got everybody talking about it. And that's, you know, that's the ideal thing. But to be able to, thanks to, you know, the work of the Welsh Government and to Conwy Council, we've now got the opportunity of being able to close roads, which means that we can transform the way that we go about how the rally looks. The complaints that we've had and from the past is that we go down to Mid Wales and the long road sections, and that it's impossible then to get back to service and to utilise the fantastic facilities that the manufacturers have back in the rally village in Deeside. So now we can do that. We have Friday in North Wales, we've taken, which I think is going to be a great stage, is taking Brennig and Alwyn and joint linked them together and gone to almost a 30k stage in there. We can you know, we can do the same thing with Pin Macno. And you know, it offers up different opportunities, and we can get back to Deeside at around about lunchtime for service. So that keeps the manufacturers happy from there. And then Saturday is just, you know, we're calling it a super Saturday. It's what, 93 miles down in Mid Wales, using the classic stages that we have. We've got, you know, Myheron. We're joining Sweet Lamb together with Hafren, which hasn't been done for a few years. We've got Duffy, Garth, Garthinyog. And then the one run of Dufnant, which will now be our new live TV stage, because for the last couple of years it's been Garthinyog. We'll have the traditional break at sort of lunchtime in Newtown for a tyre fitting zone, and go back out and do that loop again. So I think it's something like 14-hour day, that one. So it's a big challenge. First stage starts at 8:30 in the morning. Last one is starting there at 5:30. But they, you know, they've got to get down there. And then Sunday, again, we can get back into North Wales. We can reuse the closed road legislation so that we can open up the Elsie stage. We can open up the Gwydir stage. Elsie's never been used on the World Championship before. But Gwydir, we can open that up to increase it in size. And that'll be our power stage on its first run on Sunday morning. And then, if you like, then we get the real one of bringing the rally to the people, which is going to be Great Orm and Llandudno. So you've got the running against what is the norm on Great Orm, and then coming out and into the town of Llandudno and using the streets around there before finishing just past St George's Hotel on beside the Promenade Road, and then go back out to Gwydir again. And have the big finale with the Great Orm and Llandudno second run, where we'll have the big podium, the winner of the event, right on the prom there, just in the middle of the crowds. So it really is bringing the event to the people, and hopefully that will, you know, that and well, if anything else, the helicopter shots of the carsmen around the Orm will be phenomenal.
Absolutely. What's the situation? I did read somewhere, I'm not, I don't always put this one on your toe. Is there going to be some free access as well on some of the stages? Is that, have I got that right, or have I got that wrong?
No, you've got that right. The both stages of Llandudno are free for viewing, thanks to the support of Conwy Council. The Rally Village at Deeside is always free access as well. There's day passes on sale now for the tickets for Friday, Saturday or Sunday. These prices have been held from last year, and the administration fees and things like that, you always get that horrible where you buy your ticket and then you see an admin fee or some of that going on to it. None of that's there. It's one price and that's it. But then the World Rally Pass is now 9 years it's been held at the same price, and that gives you access to every stage. And also gives you parking a lot right into the Rally Village at Deeside as well. So all good value, and just means that you can plan your full weekend from there.
There you go. There you go. A very succinct sales pitch there, Ian Campbell.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was done very well. No, all joking aside, I really wanted to get you on to talk about it. Obviously, there was the delay and everybody was a little bit concerned, but I think it sounds like a compromise was reached across the board. Is that fair to say? Is that, was it one of those moments that we kind of went, well, if we do this and we give you that, you can do this and then you can have that. Is it one of those conversations?
We've had very good support from the Welsh Government and from Conwy, but we've had very good support from the WRC promoter and from the FIA. And as you kind of summed it up very well there, and that we've all worked together. We know what the sport needs to achieve from a sporting perspective of the competition on the stages, but we also know what the sport also has to achieve in getting itself out there and to the people, and from a promotional aspect as well. And it's like all routes, no matter whether it's a national B event to a World Rally Championship event, all routes are always a compromise. But this one here is just so different from what we've done since we've come to North Wales, that to me, it just, you know, it makes it very exciting to just, you know, think that you can be up in North Wales, we can get back to service. But then the long day on Saturday, which is the real classic big tests for that distance, and then just the opportunity to actually, you know, to go and rally through the middle of a town is something that we just haven't had really had the opportunity to do in the UK very much. So this is very much going to be a first for Wales. So we're looking forward to it.
Ian, stop it, because you're going to get me wanting to do it. I'm not doing it. Leave it alone. I'm not doing it.
Entries open just in August. I'll send you the email.
No. It won't be happening. It won't be happening this year until Johnny's 21, and then maybe.
But there is a national rally as well, so you know, you can just sort it out a wee bit, give yourself some time for childcare, and then go and do the national.
Oh, stop it. Stop it, Ian Campbell. Listen, you've got 48 days off now before your next round, so don't be bombarding me every day with an email.
Don't say that too loud, because the bosses might be listening.
Okay, there you go. Listen, Ian Campbell, thank you so much for coming back and talking to us at Absolute Rally. Folks, we're going to be back after this break with Trevor Agnew.
You're listening to Absolute Rally. Get all the latest updates by following us on Twitter at @Absolute_Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And if you've been listening to us for the last few weeks, obviously on season 11 and obviously now season 12, we've been doing a bit of a coaching bit with Trevor Agnew. Of course, you can check that out on his website, Stakes by Stakes, which we also tweeted out last week. But we're now at the final section. We're going to do a little bit of a recap with Trev, obviously. Hello, Trev.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. But there's a part of me that's quite excited for the last section. There's also a part of me that's a little bit disappointed that we're now at the last point.
All right, okay. Wasn't that good then?
Yeah, I think it has. Yeah, I've enjoyed doing this. We've had some great feedback. I think it's been something different. So I suppose we better recap to make people, if they haven't heard the earlier ones, maybe go back and download those ones. So maybe we need to go through the steps from the beginning to end up right at the end.
Wouldn't be a bad idea, you know, on the back of how statesbystage.com originated, I got asked to do WRC Live, the radio commentary. On the back of some of the things I was talking about then, people started to ask me, well, would you do more about that? Would you write it down? Would you do a blog? And so I thought, well, I'll give something back and do it. So it wasn't that hard to put together a little blog. And then just started to get into it a little bit more. And then we've had a conversation a while ago, and you mentioned about doing something. So I think it was just one of those ideas that came together quite nicely in the end, didn't it?
I think it did. I think it's worked. Do you know what? Now I'm kind of searching for the next thing. That's the problem now, because it's kind of worked. And it hasn't kind of. It has worked. So where do we need to do some? The feedback's been great.
The feedback's been great, both on the website and also what we've got through Absolute Rally as well. And the next one has to be an F2 program. There's no doubt about that. There's so many people ask me about it, let alone asking you about it. So that has to be done, because you've been talking about it for about 22 years now.
It feels like it is. Well, to be fair, I need you to help me with that.
That's not a problem. I've got so many different ideas around that. But, you know, I think you need to make it over a series as well, because you could not do it in an hour. You couldn't do it in 2 hours.
No, I don't think you could. I would like to get, and this is the bizarre thing, that most of the drivers we've probably had, and funnily enough, I was talking to one of your former drivers the other day. I was talking to Martin Rowe the other day. Of course, you know, a guy that was synonymous with the McGann, Mark Higgins, talking to not so long ago. You know, all the runners and riders that were around are not a million miles away from just reaching out to them. And it's just kind of reached out to them and going, right, can we do this? And I suppose the odd one out that we haven't had as a guest is Gwyndaf.
Yeah, you've never had Gwyndaf?
No.
Wow, okay. Well, Gwyndaf Howard as well. You know, it's not just the driver.
I know, I'm sorry, I've just realised you're a co-driver. I've just realised that. Howard has actually been on, and Howard has actually talked about the F2 days with us, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So, but albeit very briefly.
But it's not just the drivers, it's the co-drivers, it's the team managers, it's the current drivers who remember it fondly, like a Craig Breen. There's so many people remember back to those times, the journalists that were involved in it. You could get lots of different perspectives of what that era was like, because it was quite incredible, wasn't it?
I think it was. But anyway, listen, that's a different conversation for a different podcast. Right, we're now on the downward slope of the final section. Syllabus, I'm going to call it that one last time. For the coaching section. So let's just recap and let's just get us to the final section.
Right, okay. So I started off with a question a lot of people need to ask themselves, why do you rally? So what's the benefit for you long term? Just people just keep doing it for the sake of doing it? So are they still enjoying it? Or what is it you want to do? Do you want to make a career out of it? Do you want to be a multiple world champion? And that's the question that has to be asked right at the start. So once you've asked that question, then you get a little bit more of a perspective. You get a little bit clearer on what you want to do with it. And then you start to think about what's the long-term goal then. So now that I know why I rally and I know what I want to achieve in 5 years, whatever time frame it is, 3 years could be even less than that. Once you know all of that, then what's stopping you doing it? So get rid of all the limiting beliefs, such as money in particular. So what if you had all the money? And the money will come later. There's plenty of people who have got the money on the back of saying, right, yes, this is definitely what I'm going to do. So get rid of those limiting beliefs, just focus on a goal, and then everything else will fall into place. Next stage then is you have to look at where you are now. So as regards performance, as regards the funding you currently have, as regards the time that you can put into it. But the most important thing then is to think of, what else do I need to know? What extra knowledge do I need? What else do I need to do? Is there any skills that I need to practice? And more importantly, what's the attitude? The attitude has to be, yeah, I can definitely do this. This is what I'm going to do. And you need those three things, knowledge, skills, and attitude, to be able to propel you towards it. Then you've got to think about how much it will cost. We're not just talking financially. We're talking about what you're willing to sacrifice in order to achieve this goal long term. That's really important that you put that. And you start to think about that. So many people start off down the track and they think, oh, God, this is too much. So you need to get that clear as well to start. Then the milestones along the way. So you're breaking it down from one long-term goal into smaller little bite-sized chunks that you can achieve, and be realistic about that. Make sure you specifically know what you want to achieve in each of those steps. Make sure you have some form of measurement in it. Be realistic of what you're going to be able to achieve, and therefore it'll be clear where you want to be at the end of it. That's really important to get that bit right as well. So those are the milestones or little mini goals that you have along the way. And another question at this point, when you've done all of that, that I would ask is, why have you not done it already? So what's been holding you back to this point? And again, is that fact or is that just an assumption? Is that because you feel you can't do it or nobody else has done it that you think? And those are the things that will start to really push you. And this is where me as a coach, when I'm talking to people, this is where I really get into them. You have to drill down. You have to be quite harsh when it comes to that. You have to be on it and make sure there's no excuses coming up at this point. So the question is, what are you going to do? Now you've listed all of these goals, you know exactly where you want to go, you know what the benefits will be there, what are you going to do now? Okay, so you've got your criteria, you've got your measurements of success. When are you going to start and finish each step? When are you going to monitor those steps? What would hinder you taking those steps? In other words, what personal resistance do you have? If you're the sort of person who procrastinate and you're always trying to do other things, of course, we're all like that. We all do it. There's lots of help out there. There's books that you can get to stop that procrastination if you want to go down that route. What will you do to eliminate those external, internal factors? Remember, we talked about the biggest competitor is the one inside your head. So how can you handle that? Does anybody need to know what your plans are? Is it good to tell other people? Do you need support from other people? And if so, from who? What's in it for them if they're going to help you? You know, those are the sorts of questions. And then what? Ideally, what you need to do is get to a point. You question your commitment. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you need to do? So what? On that scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being, I'm absolutely going to do it, where are you on that scale? If it's anything less than a 10, then how do you get it closer to 10? Because that's the key. Unless you actually nail that now, then it ain't going to go anywhere. So those are the important steps. Those are all questions. I appreciate they're all quick fire. But if you want to listen back to this, just pause it as you go and just ask yourselves those questions as we go. I think it's important just that we've mentioned all of those as we go. And you've probably got a couple of questions for me now.
Do you know the one thing, and I suppose it's because it's me, but I'm always fascinated that I guess I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm going to voice it because otherwise, you know, it's just really bad audio. Is there an age limit on these things, you think? And is that qualified by, I suppose, do you really want to do this? Have you really got the ability to do it, or whatever it may be? Where does age come into it?
Well, age comes in with realism, you know. There's no point in me or you trying to be Sebastian Ogier at our age. That just isn't going to happen. It's just a stupid thought. So you have to be, there has to be a level of realism in there. And the age side of things will clearly reflect on that. Like your reflexes at your age, my reflexes at my age, aren't going to be anywhere near somebody who is Callie Rovanpera and people like that. Because these are the next guys who are coming along. If you want to go down that route, if you want to be the next World Rally Champion or a multiple World Rally Champion, you've got to look at who's about to break through. And a kid who's 8 years of age was driving a Toyota Starlet really fast, and the videos you've seen, a lot of our listeners will have seen those videos, who's now breaking into WRC2, and the speed that we saw him in Argentina, the speed he was committed to there was incredible until he had that scary off. But you know, that's not going to be the last one he's going to have of those at the speed he's going. So you have to be realistic in what you're hoping to achieve, you know. And I think that's where the age part of it comes into. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, do you know what? I think the other thing as well, I think as we all get older, as much as we hate to, we tend to, you know, I think we tend to, you know, obviously family comes along, partners come along and things like that. And, you know, I think our perception of life probably changes when that happens. You know, it's massive change on me when my son was born, you know, and I came to fatherhood quite late, but it does turn your perspective on life and doing the things that you do very much on its head, and you know, you value your time so much more.
So that goes back to the why. You know, we spoke about this a couple of times as we've gone through the series. It changes, you know. I know plenty of people have been rallying for the last 15, 20 years and they continue to do it. Some of them are not quite sure, they just do it because they've always done it. They sit back and look at what they actually achieve. Is it more frustrating to compete for the limited success that they've got, or you know, would it be better for them to go on a holiday for a couple of weeks to New York or something like that? And that's really their question. They've got to work that out themselves. And as your life changes, your circumstances changes, your time's being committed elsewhere. And of course, nowadays there's so many different lifestyle choices you've got based on all the digital age that we're living in now, and you know, TV on demand, everything goes with it. You've got all those different choices and different areas that you can do leisure activities. And just because you've always rallied doesn't mean that you should continue doing that, because it might be something that would be more enjoyable if you think about it a little bit clearer.
That's a scary thought. Don't have me thinking about anything else. The next thing is I'm truck racing or something like that. So,
but hope Paddy doesn't listen to this.
Right. So we're at the final section, Trev.
Yeah.
So take us through it.
Well, that's it, basically, Tony. You know, for those people who followed the program up to this point, and we've gone through exactly what we've said. We've picked the idea. We've set a goal. We've gone through all the stages of where we are. The only last thing that we could potentially do in a month's time is come back and start ask the question as to whether people have done it or not. There's certainly plenty of indications from people that they say, yeah, good idea, wish we'd have seen this earlier, wish we'd have seen it when I was competing, or, you know, I had something like this and somebody talking to me. You know, and you think about drivers, even at world level now, and it frustrates me sometimes to see all the opportunities that are out there for people to improve their skills, have better knowledge about the physics of cars, for example. And we're just about to go into the World Football World Cup. And it'll be the same thing with the England team, who have over the last few tournaments. They end up losing in penalties. And yet, you know, I don't know that there's that much evidence of England footballers going out and practicing penalties under a situation where, you know, you can't recreate what's going to happen in a World Cup game, but you can certainly put yourself under pressure in different ways and think about the whole psychological side of things. And it's no different to drivers going out who are primarily very good on gravel, but, you know, the closer it gets to a tarmac rally, they'll maybe do one or two days around a track with a race driver or a race instructor. And they expect that to help them, their performance on tarmac, on, you know, three or four tarmac rallies in a year. Well, I think there's a lot of opportunities there where people can do things a little bit differently and be creative in their thinking around it. And for me, that's always that I've been trying to look out for, is trying to do something a little bit different, looking at alternative ways to increase your performance. And for me, I've always had a coach who I've also used various mentors and people who've been able to tell me and give me advice based on their experience and the mistakes that they've made. So if you're hungry for that knowledge and you want to do it a little bit differently, then coaching may work for you. It won't work for everybody. But, you know, go back to what we said before. If it's something you're interested in, there's a resource there that's free on stagebystage.com. You can listen back to the series. Hopefully it'll propel you forward. And as I said at the start, this isn't just about rallying. This isn't just about trying to become a world champion. This is about trying to improve your performance in anything you do in life. You know, just ask three questions. What went well? What could have gone better? On the back of that knowledge, what am I going to do differently next time? You know, those are the questions. And any project or anything you do in life will help you do it a little bit better next time you go back to it.
Do you know what? I've got nothing else to add. That, I think that's a perfect way to wrap up this particular section. I really do. So I'm not going to, the only thing I'm going to do, I'm going to do the goodbyes. Mm-hmm. That's it. I'm not going to add anything to that, because that's a mic dropping moment for me, that one. That's a mic dropping moment. So there you go. So listen, folks,
thanks a million just for, you know, for facilitating it. It's been great. You know, I know you enjoy the coaching side of things. I know you see the benefits in it. I certainly hope we've sort of raised awareness of the potential that other people can use it. You know, my role in doing this was just to give something back a little bit. It's not a commercial thing for me. I've got lots of other things to do, but we've got the resource there. If you enjoy it, go back to stagebystage.com, have a listen back to it. And thanks very much for having the vision to see something a little bit differently. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have.
I've loved it. And I'm going to go back and revisit it. As I say, we've actually had people asking us to try and turn it into one podcast. I may try and do that at the end of the season, this particular season. We may try and turn it into one podcast, but there you go. Trevor, you'll be back with us in the next few weeks anyway, because you're a multi-talented and multifaceted guy. So you'll be involved with us doing something else. Folks, that is the end of episode 2, season 12 of Absolute Rally. You know where we live now. It's @_rallycourse on Twitter, facebook.com/absoluterally. You can find the old episodes on the website, also absoluterally.co.uk. We do appreciate the love of the download. If you could subscribe, that would be even better. Believe it or not, it actually helps us with algorithms and things, which I don't really understand. But all I know is it makes a difference when it's physically subscribed to on iTunes and various other platforms that where you probably get your podcast from. Anyway, I'm waffling on. Folks, we do appreciate the download. We will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole this time next week.